I'm honored, and I want to thank Bob and Cargill. I want to thank DuPont for the sponsorship. DuPont is an amazing company that has the fortitude and the audacity not only to bring a lot of innovation, but to be a leader in the speaking up of that innovation. And then lastly is CAST. I just cannot say enough about this organization in terms of the focus of being able to say, you know, the center of this issue is driven by technology, and remembering that, and the fortitude of just staying with the overall message of what we're trying to do. So I guess I would like to just stop and for all of us to thank CAST. They do a lot of hard work on a constant basis and probably don't get the recognition they do deserve. So let's just take a moment, I'd like to, and recognize the organization that's critical and a big part of this morning. Thank you. Bob said it all this morning. I think I looked at my breakfast this morning and said to myself, very similar. There's more than two out of three people in this world that not only asked if I'm going to eat, or maybe there's a mother right now, right here in Des Moines, that's sending their child to school that maybe gave them something that she didn't feel very good about because they were affordable calories, not the best calories. Maybe it was a Pop-Tart instead of an egg, or it was cold, it wasn't a warm breakfast. Food security is bigger, and that's really what I'd like to do today, is to just kind of put a little bit more context into this message. And I think I look out here and see a lot of you to say, I'm very humbled, and I'm feeling very small right now, because there's a lot of people in this room that are very, very good at this and understand this a lot better than I do, so I'm no expert. But I know a lot of you, as I look at you, you take this very personal. And I think we have to be personal with this. I heard someone speak recently that said, any leader that's truly engaged in the cause and the passion they're in always has a story, because they're so self-aware of what the issue is, they see it around them all the time. And one of my latest stories is, a few weeks ago, I'm brushing my teeth in the bathroom, getting ready for work, and like many of you, my spouse stands next to me at the sink next to me, and she's brushing her teeth, and she says, Jeff, I had something happen to me yesterday you got to hear about. And this is a family cause for us, this whole food and hunger area. And she shops at a food bank 2 days a week. And she said, yesterday, I do a dozen to 15 families every day, Jeff, you know, and take them through and shop in a food bank right near our home. She said, I walked out yesterday, and I picked up a mother, one of my last people to pick up to shop with, and this mother and a 9-year-old daughter that really reminded me of Lila, our 9-year-old daughter. And she said, as I started to go back into that food bank, this woman was so apologetic about being here. And she was apologetic to say that, hey, 1 month ago, everything was fine in my life and everything went wrong. And she continued to be so humbled and so thankful. And the daughter didn't say anything, just followed her mother a couple steps behind. So in the course of the next 20 minutes, they have 15 credit points for the food bank, and my wife helps them make selections and tries to make good quality selections, and they get down. And all the while, she says, the daughter, the 9-year-old, is just looking at the cupboards of food and is amazed and stopping and looking, not seeing anything. Polite girl. And this mother continues to say, I don't know what I would do without this. Thank you, thank you. And I have a half a point left. And the mother even kind of turns and says, just, you know, I guess I don't need anything else. My wife said, no, we actually have a special. This week, we have 15 oranges for a half a point credit. And at that moment, my wife said, I was rocked doing this for 2 years. The mother turns and sees all these oranges, and the daughter sees the oranges, and here's 15, and turns to her mother, grabs her hand, my wife's behind them, and in total innocence, looks up and says, Mom, we don't have to be hungry anymore. This is going to be so great. And right there, you know, my wife turns to me and says, that's a joy that shouldn't exist in a 9-year-old girl that lives a few blocks from us in the 14th wealthiest county in the United States. And I think the big challenge to all of us is, I will challenge that there's a face that's going to walk by us maybe every day, that there's a story behind that face, that securing people with food is real. And that's really my challenge is... One piece of this I can go to is, I think there's a multitude of faces. And there's six faces I kind of call of food security. And I have a picture there that represents different people that have been in my life the last 2 years. But we've spent a lot of time, and my argument is we've spent maybe too much time talking about the extremeness of hunger. And doing a lot of communicating in the last 2 or 3 years, I'm finding there's a numbness to that. I can't relate to that. I can't relate to that UNICEF commercial someone told me about 2 weeks ago. And so I see that as the collapse, but that's only one. That's the 25,000 every day that struggle with malnutrition, that die of some type of disease because of that. But there's also the deficiency. That's a Luna, a picture of a girl, the second one, that I was in a school in Africa that said, you know, her only meal a day and why she really comes to school is for the rice and beans. And probably most of those 200 kids in that classroom had never had animal-based protein. You know, the third one where a bunch of boys and my daughter and I took on a 16th birthday trip to Haiti. We played soccer with for 3 hours, and my observation was those boys, as they played soccer, there was one or two of them always jumping off the game, catching a walk-by to hunt down the food. The real hunger games of saying, as Bob said, I don't know when and where my next meal is going to come from, but I'm gonna find it. And there's a lot. They say 40% of the population living on $2 a day is in the hunt. The other one is the edge. This is the girl in the food bank. This is, they say, Americans and Europeans, one out of three are two major events away from being in a crisis and struggling with food security. Another face is one that recently hit me was, I sat in downtown Indianapolis with a bunch of mothers that all they talked about was accessibility to quality calories. And they were heart-wrenched and crying, tears coming off their faces saying, we are mothers of kids. And this one lady, Wendy, says to me, my daughter is overweight, but she's hungry all the time. And all I can feed her is what I can buy at CVS and Walgreens because I can't get to a grocery store. And the quality of calories has become an issue. And she said, I have a daughter now that's 13 years old that is overweight and has failed the Indiana basic education test. She's skinny in the mind and obese in the body. And the last one is tradition. I was in Europe recently and someone said, we must fight for the last face, Jeff, you don't have here, is the tradition we have to fight for security of food to say, in France in the morning, a quiche is important. And my family, and that's some of my kids, is, hey, we like eggs, as some of you know, a few times. I know Rob Aukerman, head of our U.S. business, is, hey, a roast after, or a ham after church is a big deal. Fighting for the tradition of food is also important. So my one last challenge is, I think there's six faces. And it's not just from disease, it goes all the way to the decisions we make every day. And that's what all of you are fighting for. And I challenge to say, we gotta make this a little bit bigger of a spectrum. And say, every one of us walks by a face that's seeking food security every day. And I think we need to dig in and understand that and bring the broader message of food security. I say food security, some people say, what is it? I sat with a major retailer the other day and it got confused with food safety. No, food security is when food's a non-issue. That I don't need to worry or think about food anymore. That's what we're striving for. That's what World Food Prize is for, and Ambassador Quinn, and what Norman Borlaug's vision was a long time ago. Let's make food a non-issue. And I think we've got to shift our paradigm a little bit. And I'm going to quickly speak because I think there's a great panel here that has a lot more wisdom and spectrum than me, but I know they all feel this way. We need to shift this conversation from a crisis to a solution. I say all the time, I sit with the president of diabetes and Eli Lilly, our pharmaceutical company I'm part of, cancer, there's president of cancer, Alzheimer's. They all are seeking the solution. They don't have it. We have our solution. We have the solution to the biggest health problem in the world. We also, this is, I think, bigger than hunger. This is about food security. I think we've lost some of our audience because we've spent so much time talking about the extremeness that most of the world can never get to experience and see. The other is we come to a lot of conventions, and we talk and we work in packs. And one of the things I challenge all of my fellow executives and companies is, let's stop being so politically correct. And let's make this as personal as possible. Let's all of us have a story every week about what we do. And lastly is really this. I'm really here more about a movement. And I'll share a little bit of the challenge we have inside Elanco to say, no more talk. What can we do from World Food Prize 2013 to World Food Prize 2014? So in front of you is a little bit of a what I kind of call our mission or our manifesto. I know a lot of you believe this, but we're about to release a report that's more of
our perspective, but it's a way to be a little bit more provocative than we've ever been. And the opening page is really this. And bottom line, without going, and some of it's in front of you, is just simply saying, enough's enough. We have enough. We've talked enough. I don't know about you, but there's a positive ending to this story, and it's time to do it. And in my short comments, I want to say, I think we're at a tipping point. And it's time to make that happen. I think we all have a vision. I have a vision that we're headed to 9 billion. But it isn't just 9 billion people with food. I believe, as it was shared this morning, a more stable world. I was with our Middle East business last week, and they said, don't be fooled. The unrest in a lot of these dictator communist countries is the unrest of hungry people. We have a more stable world, I see, before 2050. We have people and mothers sitting in urban cities like Des Moines and Indianapolis that have kids that are eating better meals and are passing and are stronger and smarter in school and more engaged. And obesity and diabetes is less. I see one where we're using a lot more less resources than we are today. We've got to not only freeze the footprint, we got to produce all this more food with less. That's my vision. What's yours? My challenge is, let's not leave World Food Prize 2013 without my even challenges. Sign that. I'm asking some people to go to this sensibletable.com at the end and say, make food security your cause. That's what this new generation wants. But candidly, any industry, we got to sign up and say, personally, this is part of who I am. So my aspirations between this World Food Prize and next, on behalf of a great company I want to also thank is Elanco. I work with 3,000 passionate people that are on fire, that I get fueled every day by them. And here's our goals. One is 10,000 individuals sign up to make this their cause. I'll make it mandatory for the 3,000, so we're a third of the way there. Second is 1 million positive impressions per week with media, which I'll talk about. We've actually had a few weeks here. But, and my challenge for all the other companies is, let's balance this debate and insert with social media and other things, is let's put the food security positive impression back into the world in positive impressions. And I'll talk about that. But our goal is 1 million a week. The other is, we have a pipeline with 250 million more people fed. That's how we're measuring our pipeline. And how we can feed in the next 5 to 7, 10 years, 250 million more people in meat, milk, and eggs with our pipeline. My challenge is, let's rally, as Norman Borlaug said, we've got enough innovation, but let's take our pipelines and call out of how we could feed a billion more people in the next decade, and the DuPonts and the Monsantos and others that are here today, and this vision. That's World Food Prize this year to next year. That's our goals and our aspirations. Join us. The first thing is, what's in front of you? Make this your cause. We spend too many times going to events and leaving and not doing a whole lot. Now, here's my, I always have some numbers. Here's the three, I think, new numbers that matter now to me. So when I'm on an airplane, or I always spend every other Thursday night, my wife's book club comes, and that's my new test. And she goes, oh, here comes Jeff, and I always come out, usually after one glass of wine, and I go crazy and test my stuff, okay? So these three numbers worked, okay? But these, I think, are the realities of where we're facing. The first is, this whole, we've heard it, you hear it, it'll be said 100 times here. We're living between the 7 and the 9. We know that. 7 billion people, 9 billion people. The story that isn't probably getting enough notoriety is the 3 billion of middle class that's emerging. This is a positive story. I told this at an investor conference last week. And we, in the next 7 years, will put more people in the middle class than in the history of man. And we're the leaders in food in this room. That's a great story. And that probably isn't highlighted enough. The other is, that's going to drive different diets. And there will be a 60% increase in meat, milk, and eggs between now and 2050. And so a lot of people are saying, hey, why is this important? Well, to our employees and our business, and to a lot of you, this is a big deal. And they deserve a different diet, and doing this is critical. And the last one is one I think the World Wildlife Fund talks a lot about, is sometime, I think it was August 27th, we went over we've used the resources for the year mark. And we're now living on a planet and a half when it comes to renewing the resources. So don't tell me innovation isn't important, because we no longer need to freeze the footprint, but we need to reverse the footprint. So this is a graphic that I spend time at an investor conference or anywhere I talk saying, this is a window, and we're in a window of time. And these are three numbers that are really important. 3 billion middle class, 60% more meat, milk, and eggs And we're living on a planet and a half. The ultimate solution is what CAS stands for, and that is science and technology and being able to do what we all do.
We hear also, and I don't expect you all to read that, because even up close, I have to get my glasses out.
But the point is, I think, this is the last 12 to 18 months headlines. We pulled this out. This is one of the graphics in the report that we're coming out with in early November. But we are at a tipping point. Don't tell me that things aren't, food security isn't hitting us in day to day. Pick the newspaper up. Everything from, we just hit the most severe obesity that we've ever hit, to four or five major unrests that have happened since the last World Food Prize here last year, to, you can go right around, to major global meat companies buying other meat companies, and the globalization of the just in our sector. These are just headlines that have happened in the last 12 months. We are at a tipping point. It is here. We're not chasing something far away. It's here and now.
So, the vision, I think, in a picture here is, as you see, and we've already talked about it, but more access, more affordable food, kind of looking at the whole health piece. I no longer hold any kind of a secondary position in a top seven human pharmaceutical company. I said, we're the number one health solution. Food and nutrition and protecting against malnutrition and better calories, we need a healthier world, and we're a bigger part of that than ever. Resources and how we do things, not just with less, but to reverse this. We need to be more innovative than ever. And I'm going to use an example here in just a minute. And the last is a more stable world. This, to me, is a picture of what we see in terms of the vision. And there'll be some things in our Enough report. Let me use an example. I don't have music. I've never been good at music, and I understand that's what worked last year. So Cass said to me, you've got to do something. We're the award winners, so do something creative. Well, here's something I did in Europe with about 1,000 people in the room back in April as a way to try to send a message to maybe a part of the world that I wanted to make it very clear. And so I used what I believe, and some of you may not be able to see this, but I used what I think is one of the most precious foods out there, which is milk. Would you all agree? There's a lot of mothers that would say, hey, this is my aspiration. Food banks say this is the number one demanded item. The mothers I met with actually would say we fill it up with water halfway through the week. We know that what this can do to a child, from brain development to things you'll hear about in the panel, this is critical right here, a glass of milk. This also is one of the greatest food gaps we currently have. As you can see, we've doubled in the last 50 years milk. But per person, we have 14% less. So here's what these three glasses represent. These three glasses represent 8 ounces approximately each, 24 ounces, is what you all consume on a daily basis. Europeans, Americans, first world. I know, like my family, that's mostly yogurt and pizza cheese. It isn't necessarily food or milk. Sorry, Chris. Butter. The Land of Lakes up here. Now, let me make a little bit of an example here, though. If I separate these, there's another story. There's what we have globally per person, which is 8 ounces. Are you with me? This is what we have. We consume three. But around the world, if you split the milk up, it's 1 8-ounce glass per person. What is recommended? We'll have a dietitian up here in a little bit. What is recommended, okay, and is 2 glasses. So this is the gap that we currently have. Let me try to put a little light onto this. If you look and say, and we had an outside part of this paper, we had an outside group of people look at different proteins in the gaps by country, by protein group. What was interesting here is if we just stay the course out through the 9 billion people, we will, and keep to the one glass, we'll have 4.5 billion people with no access. So staying the course is not an option. And then you can say, but Jeff, do you really need two? We don't need 2 glasses of milk. Well, there was a landmark research study done in Kenya. A lot of you have heard it cited. I think it was cited last year at the World Food Prize, where test scores were given with Kenya kids. I mean, well done research study. And it showed that when that study started, they did test scores. Well, those, if they stayed on their current diet, their test scores went down 10%. Then they supplemented, same amount of calories. It isn't just the calories, it's the quality of calories. So the kids got the same amount of calories, but in oils, they were 7% less on their test scores. And with milk,
a milk supplemented diet, they had 28% better. And with meat, 45% better. I'm sorry, but the quality of calories do matter. The quality of the diet matters. Rice and beans alone is not our answer. And people that challenge back to say, we don't need 2 glasses of milk per person, I say is the wrong answer. We need 2 glasses of milk per person. And we've got one. So that leads, of course, obviously, when I was in Europe, is to say, well, what happens? Well, if we stay on the current course as we are now and just continue, we will need 40 million more dairy cows to make this happen. If we went and said, let's go organic across the board, we would need 75 million where we are, okay? So let's put this in context, okay, in terms of a dairy cow. A dairy cow globally will produce 32 of these glasses, 2 gallons. Here in the U.S., it's 7 gallons, so that's 3.5 times what you see up there. But globally, the global dairy cow produces 32. So the real question is, well, then how much more do we need? How much more would we need? Shockingly, we need, they even put a black line on the glass here for me, it's not to go over, is we need this much, 4.75 ounces per cow per day. If that, we don't need the 40 million more dairy cows. Okay. Is that possible? Well, I looked and said, take a look at this. If that's our goal, 4.75, the top producing dairy countries on average per year are producing in the neighborhood of 14. So that would be, you know, almost 4 times this. And that's happening naturally year by year. What's even more exciting to me is countries that are emerging, and a lot of companies around here that are working and helping innovate, is there's a lot of exciting things happening. And you look at places like East Europe and Ukraine and Portugal, these emerging top producing dairy, most improved, you can see they're doing 5 times that. And you say, what are they doing? As we double clicked and studied that, you know what the first thing was? Fresh water. That's pretty innovative. But it's vaccinations, reproduction. Spreading innovation around the world is possible. This right here fills the gap. This right here gives everybody 2 glasses. This right here improves test scores. And this right here makes us turn this 1.5 planets around. This is very doable. I'm very confident. So that's kind of a different way, different than music. That kind of puts it. What also it does is I think, hey, as a whole, it does say, as a whole, as you play this out to 20, 50, 66 million cows, the landmass of Alaska, the fresh water consumption annually of 3 major countries in Europe are examples. So that leads to, can we do this? And so let me just share what I believe is in the center of this vision in this circle is 70% plus of the solution is innovation. Doing it better, doing it different, from fresh water to reproduction to the next plant genetic platform that moves forward. The other two that I think are equally as important is choice and trade. Let me touch briefly on them, and then we'll bring the panel up. The power of innovation, one thing we did in preparing this paper is went out and got 20 global experts that study this all the time, and we surveyed them and said, what are the most important things to have an impact? And what came back, you may not be able to read all this, but this report was released yesterday by the Center of Food Integrity, is if you look at kind of that top section, it's from smallholder farmers up to policies and technology. It is enabling the technology that currently already exists to be released and globalized around the world. That is the number one solution from 20 independent experts from all over the world, from China, Europe, US, Brazil. The belief is that's what's most critical. That report will be assessable. Now let me get into an area that I'm very passionate about that I think is absolutely critical. Is we hear all the time, you know, what do our consumers really want though? We live, a lot of us, in a, what I would call the luxury segment of where money for food really doesn't matter, so we have an ability to choose more than we ever do. And I would just challenge us all right now to stop, because I think this is the most important graphic of everything. Our world has changed, and I believe our measures have to change. And I've seen a huge change in the last year since I was here in terms of how we can measure what consumers want. So anytime a consumer says, or someone says, I don't think the consumers want that, I would ask you now to say, time out, stop, let's talk about this.
We used to have headlines in newspapers and CBS News articles. Now I believe we have media mentions, which not measures the monologue, it measures the dialogue. And I'll touch upon that in just a minute. The second is aided questions versus unaided questions. It's amazing how many studies are out there. Every year, we survey every study on technology in meat, milk, and eggs done by anybody. Two-thirds to three-quarters of them are aided questions. Do you want milk from a cow that was fed hormones, standing in a barn confined on its own manure for days, yes or no? Even extreme, I think you're with me here. Okay? If you can aid it to a yes or no, no, what's important to you when you buy dairy products? That's the unaided question that we're looking for. What do consumers really want? The third is, this is shocking to me, there's major retailers in the past that have measured their entire response by the call, inquiry, customer complaint line. Versus saying, give me the spend Kroger card or Publix card and tell me what people want. I challenge to all of us when we hear someone say, I'm not sure that's what the consumer wants, we need to shift to the right because our world has shifted to the right. Let me give you a little color to this. This is something we produce on over a dozen issues every week. We're measuring, this is antibiotics in meat. This could be big agriculture that Chris and others can talk about. This can be animal well-being. Is to say, if you look at this, it's the number of mentions in the world on the different sources from Twitter, YouTube, news. So it is what is being talked about out there. And it clearly, when you say 400 or 500 mentions globally, that's very low. 5,000 starts to get to where, hey, we might have something here. And the cloud is the conversation, and you all probably know this. Just to put in perspective, we've been challenged some by, hey, how much dialogue is going on some of the things? Well, you'll have somebody from the government up here in a minute, Chuck, but the U.S. government shut down on one day. We had over 800 and some thousand mentions out there and the dialogue that was occurring. Compared to the comeback even, we had an issue in June once, and someone called in and said, there's an issue right now today on antibiotics. We're hearing a lot of news on antibiotics in meat. No question. Got to respond. Got to be there. There was 400 and some mentions that day. And they said, how big is that? And I said, well, today there's over 40,000 on the worry of Americans losing a Twinkie. So the challenge to us is, what have we learned from this? Is if you have 5,000 mentions a day for 3 days, the experts say, you got to monitor this. This is an issue. You got to work with the regulator, the innovator. Retailers got to understand. There needs to be a response system in place. If it's a pop in a local little area with 20 mentions, be careful not to make any permanent decision during that. And monitoring and looking at this is absolutely critical. Making sure every retailer and every major food production company has this information. Every day, if they need it, is absolutely critical. To really know what the consumer is saying is vitally important. The other is the whole unaided questions. Every year, we look at all the studies out there, we update this, and we look at the spend data, and I'm sorry, the data keeps coming back over and over the same way. Trying to look, is there major differences? Over 95% of the world wants taste, cost, and nutrition. They want food. There's 4% that money doesn't matter, and that's luxury, and that's a key segment. And then there's a small percentage that would, you know, fall more in the 1-2% that this has become a social movement the other way. Maybe I don't want animals consumed, or I want something changed. This becomes a state proposition or becomes something else. And then I think prices, you know, this is just a comparison. A couple of years ago, we paid Nielsen to look at the importance of food and food decisions, and you can continue to see cost is increasing in importance. 2011, it was big. 2013, it's even more so. The last comment, and my last couple slides here, is just the third area of trade. Trade is an area that I think some people challenge. Is it really necessary? It's absolutely necessary. Between now and 2050, we must enable trade. It's absolutely critical. A couple things. Here's an example of Mexican pork. Bottom line, when borders are open, domestic grows in a country that can be competitive, GNP grows, and you know, access to more affordable calories grows. The other one is, but what about transportation? Actually, sustainability is better typically when food moves. A low
cost, highly productive country like a Brazil and the U.S., you know, transportation can be less than 4%. So food miles needs to really be put in perspective. Typically, the majority of the time, sustainability wins when food moves. Now, here's my last one that's a little provocative. And that's just simply to say, don't tell me food security isn't important. Don't tell me countries and companies aren't going to where their food is. If you take a look at the U.S. meat drawer right now and say that globalization is happening, I think it's positive that globalization is happening. But I don't know if everyone would really realize that today, if you look at foreign ownership versus U.S. ownership of our meat drawer here in the U.S., it's shifted pretty drastically. Over 40% of the pork production in the United States is foreign owned, 22% of cattle, 20% of chickens. I think the good news is globalization is usually positive. But I also, there's a secondary message to me, and that is if people can't get the food, they will come and get the food. This is critical. So I call this reverse trade in a way. So really, in conclusion, I see this as our destination. Welcome the panel that's coming up here, because I know they have different perspectives on this, but I think we all have this common vision. And in the center, innovation, choice, and trade arguably are the center of the solution of how we make it easier. And you know, and I end with just a call to action to say, don't leave the World Food Prize without signing up. I would encourage you to sign this card just as a principle between you and yourself that food security is a cause. Go to Sensible Table and just an independent site and sign up. Our goal is we've got 10,000 people from all over the world, especially the next generation, saying that, hey, this is important to us and engaging in dialogue. I end by just simply saying thank you for who you are, what you do. I'm talking to, I think, a lot of experts in this room that are very passionate about this. Let's make 2013 World Food Prize to 2014 World Food Prize the biggest, most impactful time ever. Make this our cause and make a difference. Thank you very much. I would like to now welcome...